Have you ever thought about how a city can give its downtown area a total makeover and the role our Constitution plays in that process?
Yeah, it's fascinating, right?
Totally. So today we're going deep on a case from the South Carolina Supreme Court, WDW Properties versus City of Sumter, which tackles this question of downtown revitalization, specifically with tax-exempt bonds, redevelopment efforts, and that key legal concept of public purpose.
Yeah, this deep dive is going to unpack whether using tax-exempt bonds to finance a private development project in downtown Sumter actually served a legitimate public purpose, at least according to South Carolina law. It's a great illustration of the debate about the limits of government power when it comes to stimulating economic growth.
Right. So we've got WDW Properties, a commercial property owner, and they're essentially on the outside looking in at this redevelopment zone. They're going up against, well, the City of Sumter, of course, and also the South Carolina Jobs Economic Development Authority, which is often called JEDA. And then there's Uptown Synergy, the developer set to get this bond financing. WDW's main point, from what I gather, was that they were at an unfair disadvantage.
Exactly. That's the central tension here. And for all you law students listening, this case is a really good example of the balance between trying to boost economic activity and sticking to the constitutional limits on how public resources can be used. It's a practical look at how courts actually interpret public purpose in a modern context.
Okay, so we've got this claim of unfair competition. What were the specific circumstances in Sumter that led to this whole project? What was going on there?
Well, Sumter had been designated as an urban empowerment zone under federal law. And this wasn't just some symbolic thing. It had real significance because it made it possible to use tax-exempt bonds to specifically fund projects that were focused on revitalizing areas considered, economically distressed or blighted. The idea was to create incentives for development in the places that needed it the most to kind of jumpstart a wider community benefit.
Interesting. So that sets the stage. Tell me about Uptown Synergy's project. What were they planning?
So Uptown Synergy had this plan as a $4.3 million project to revitalize some of the really rundown properties in downtown Sumter. The goal was to fix these places up and make them suitable for businesses and stores. Beyond just making the area look better, they estimated it would create around 20 new full-time jobs. To make this happen, J.D. Rowe was going to issue $2.5 million in tax-exempt bonds. Uptown Synergy would then repay these bonds with the revenue from these newly renovated properties.
Got it. And this is where WDW Properties comes in with their objections. What exactly did they have a problem with?
So WDW Properties, they own this place called Liberty Square, which was also a commercial property in Sumter. But here's the key. It was outside the urban empowerment zone. Because of that, they couldn't get the same low-interest financing as Uptown Synergy through these tax-exempt bonds. Their argument was that this put them at a real competitive disadvantage. Uptown Synergy, with their access to cheaper capital, could potentially offer lower rents or, invest more in their properties. This would make it harder for WDW to attract and keep tenants and compete effectively in the local market.
So we've got a legal battle brewing. What was the main legal question the South Carolina Supreme Court had to decide?
The big question was whether using these tax-exempt bonds to finance Uptown Synergy's private development project actually qualified as serving a public purpose as required by the South Carolina Constitution. Essentially, could the state use its financial tools like these bonds to back this kind of private venture that was aimed at revitalizing the downtown?
Public purpose, it seems simple at first glance, something that benefits the community, right? But I imagine it's a bit more nuanced than that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The basic idea is that public funds should be used for the public good. But what exactly counts as a public benefit has, well, it's changed over time. Traditionally, public purpose clearly included things like public health, safety, things like that. But as our society and economy have evolved, so has our understanding of what contributes to the overall good for the public. Now, it often includes things meant to boost economic prosperity. As the South Carolina Supreme Court nicely put it is a fluid concept which changes with time, place, population, economy, and countless other circumstances. It is a reflection of the changing needs of society.
Makes sense, given how the problems that communities face are always changing. So, how did the court actually determine whether this specific project in Sumter met that, let's say, flexible public purpose standard?
Well, the court's reasoning involved a few key things, but one important aspect was deference to the legislature. They gave a lot of weight to the fact that the legislature had decided that tackling blight and boosting economic development in distressed areas did serve a valid public purpose. The legal principle here is that courts will generally assume that legislative decisions like this are constitutional unless there's clear and convincing evidence they're not. The court also relied on precedent, particularly the case of Elliott versus McNair, and they actually acknowledged that their position in this case implicitly overruled an earlier decision, McLeod. This shift signaled that they were moving towards a broader view that allowed using bonds for retail and commercial businesses, recognizing that these businesses are important for the overall economic well-being of an area. They even quoted the idea that the consensus of modern legislative and judicial thinking is to broaden the scope of activities which may be classed as involving a public purpose. It reaches perhaps its broadest extent under the view that economic welfare is one of the main concerns of the city, state, and the federal governments.
So they're respecting the legislature's judgment, but they still had to evaluate whether this project in Sumter met the public purposes standard, right? They couldn't just give it a pass automatically.
Right. The court didn't give us a numbered list or anything, but we can see a four-part test in their decision. First, they looked at the public goal of the project, which in this case was creating jobs, fixing up those dilapidated buildings, attracting new businesses downtown, and generally revitalizing a struggling part of the city. Second, they considered the primary beneficiary. While Uptown Synergy, as the developer, would certainly benefit, the court decided that ultimately the public would be the main beneficiary because of the increase in jobs and overall economic activity. Third, they acknowledged the speculative nature of any development project. There are always risks, but they put emphasis on the legislature's intent to address the economic distress in the area. And lastly, they focused on balancing the public interest against any private gains. They determined that, in this case, the potential benefits for the public from revitalizing the downtown outweighed the private benefits that Uptown Synergy would get.
Okay, so with that in mind, it makes sense why the court wasn't swayed by WDW's argument about unfair competition. WDW was focused on their own business while the court was thinking about the bigger picture.
Exactly. The court was mostly concerned with the overall good that was supposed to come from revitalizing the urban area, not the impact on specific businesses like WDW. Just because WDW was outside the designated zone and couldn't get the same financing didn't mean the whole program didn't have a public purpose. The court basically decided that the public benefit of a revitalized downtown was more important than the disadvantage claimed by WDW.
Got it. So for all our law student listeners out there, what are the key takeaways from this WDW properties decision? What should they really understand about it?
There are several important things to grasp here. First, the legal idea of public purpose, especially when we're talking about economic development, isn't fixed or narrow. It changes and adapts to how society and the economy change. Second, courts generally defer to what legislatures decide is a valid public purpose. Unless it's a clear violation of the Constitution, courts will likely uphold those legislative judgments. Third, even indirect public benefits, like creating jobs and fixing up urban areas, can be enough to satisfy that public purpose requirement, even if private companies directly benefit too. And finally, this case is a really good example of the balancing act between promoting economic growth and making sure there's a fair playing field for all businesses in a market. Here, the court prioritized economic growth, seeing it as serving the greater good.
This case really does make you think about the role of government in shaping how our economy works. It brings up a question for our listeners to consider. Given how the court seems to defer to the legislature's judgment on public purpose, what, if any, limitations should there be on using public money to back private development projects? Where's the line, or should there even be a line, between legitimate economic development that benefits the public and creating unfair advantages for certain companies? Another way to think about it, what does this decision tell us about the proper role of the government in actively promoting economic growth versus making sure all businesses in a market have a fair shot?
Yeah, those are exactly the right questions to be asking after a case like this. And when we boil down WDW properties to its core, it really comes down to how the court interprets the idea of public purpose when it comes to economic development. It highlights how much weight they give to what the legislature intended, and that it's okay, legally speaking, for there to be indirect public benefits, even when private companies are the direct beneficiaries.
So this deep dive into WDW properties has really just scratched the surface. Think about how the legal principles we've talked about today could apply to other economic development projects you see in the news or that you might come across in your legal careers.
Absolutely. Understanding cases like WDW properties is crucial for navigating the often tricky legal world of public finance and urban development. So keep looking into these complicated issues. Keep asking questions about the balance between what benefits the public and what benefits private companies, and definitely keep exploring these fascinating areas of the law.
And with that, we'll wrap up this deep dive into WDW properties.
Until next time.